Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. We are coming to you on Thursday, September 5th for the show. Peter, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing a little extra great because my Boston College Eagles knocked off the number 10, albeit with a pretty big asterisk, I think, Florida State Seminoles on Monday night in the standalone game. I was a little worried about the standalone, but fired up nonetheless, but even more excited to dive in further into the 2025 class, because as we saw with this past draft cycle and the 23 cycle, everything creeps up way faster than you think. So I don't know, I'm excited to dive head first into it.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. I guess technically my team, the North Carolina Tar Heels, they beat Minnesota in their football opener, but I actually was forced into watching part of that game, most of the second half, actually, because I was with some UNC buddies, and man, they do not look too encouraging despite the win. So it seems like UNC football teams are just allergic to tackling and wrapping up players, but I won't get too much into my college football thoughts today. We're here to talk some draft. We got some pro players, or at least a pro player I wanted to mention on today's podcast. We're going to dive into some of the better college hitters in the class on today's show as well. So if you're really amped up to get into the 2025s, you're really just generally a prospect fan, that's probably why you follow the Baseball America feed in general. There should be something for you. But Peter, I first wanted to touch on Alejandro Rosario. I think he's an interesting prospect profile in general. He was one of the new additions to our top 100 in our September update a few days ago. He went from not ranked to number 86 on the top 100. So there is this tier of players added to the list and kind of the 75 to 100 range that I think are pretty fascinating. Rosario is one of those players. And I immediately was curious, like I had known, we've been writing about him for weeks now on the pro side, just in terms of how impressive he's been so far this season. It's a 2.24 ERA combined between low A and high A. 88.1 innings and 17 starts, 129 strikeouts and just 13 walks. So pretty impressive results across the board. But I was curious to see what's changed about him from the amateur ranks to the pro ranks, because he was a fairly interesting prospect. Even going back to high school prior to his 3 years at Miami, he was a pretty high octane pitcher in high school. He was already hitting 96, 97 pretty consistently as a high school pitcher, and even during his prep days, I felt like his velocity in particular always played a bit down. It seemed like even that mid-90s velocity didn't quite jump past high school hitters like you would expect it to, and so he always had a ton of arm talent, was always maybe a little bit of a polarizing profile, smaller guy, and then 3 years at Miami, and it was kind of more of the same. He just never really produced the sort of results you would expect for a guy who has just that sort of arm talent. I mean, over 3 years, as mostly started for Miami, it was a 6.47 ERA. That's nearly 200 innings, 21% strikeout rate, 10% walk rate. So a lot less swing and miss, and or at least strikeouts, than you would expect. I guess just give me your thoughts on what you thought about Alejandro Rosario as a draft prospect coming out of the 2023 class. He was a fifth round pick by the Rangers, signed for $438,000, essentially. I'm trying to see where we had him ranked exactly. But he certainly slid a little bit from where he was coming out of high school. What were your thoughts on him as a college player? And then we can get into maybe some of the changes that we've each individually noticed for him so far in pro ball.
Yeah, I mean, he was a, you know, there was a, the stuff was present with Rosario. I think now, especially where hindsight is 2020, even during the 2023 season at Miami, I think a lot of people were scratching their heads at kind of how Rosario and Miami were going after opposing hitters. And I think that's a little bit of a foreshadowing of the conversation we'll get into when, you know, we talk about the jump he's made in pro ball. But it was always a little puzzling, you know, how he was going after guys and, you know, the pitches he was throwing in certain counts. He was getting hit around a little bit, but like the stuff he flashed was really impressive. And I was going to circle back to this when we got into him in pro ball, but there was a really tiny window in his college / amateur career where he showed this flash. He did this, he's done this year and with the Downeast Wood Ducks and with Hickory with the Crawdads, but it was in the 2022 summer on the Cape with Hyannis. And this was fresh off a season at Miami that was the worst of his college career. He had an ERA over 7, gave up 83 hits in 60 innings, only struck out 52, walked 25, just by all accounts, really average, if not below. And again, it was a brief stint. He only threw in 3 games, but across 10 and a third innings, he struck out 13. He walked just 1, and he worked a 1.74 ERA. And I think where this is one of the classic cases of success leaves clues, maybe for the Rangers. I don't think that Miami in 23 picked up on this, but his pitch usage in Hyannis threw his fastball 60% of the time, which is actually the most heavy he's relied on it in his career. But he upped the slider usage, which I think is key, and that's something that we'll talk about further. But upping the slider usage was huge, and he also upped the usage of his split change. So I think the improved sequencing and the further reliance on his secondaries was key for him. And again, this is a point we'll probably bring up, but I think I was really encouraged by the flash that he showed on the Cape. So I was always kind of holding on to that a little bit. And then the stuff he showed was always, you know, kind of undeniable.
Yeah. I'm just going to read really quickly from our draft report from 2023, because I think it'll maybe just kind of, we'll plant the conversation around this, because as soon as he jumped on, I was really curious about this because we talked about it so much at the time. We wrote about it in his draft report, but we wrote, he averaged 95, 96 mile per hour with his fastball in 2023. And the pitch has been up to 100 miles per hour with plenty of arm side run and a bit of sink. Despite the velocity and movement, Rosario's fastball has always played down from its velocity, potentially because of a lack of deception or below average extension or both. His secondaries offer a bit more promise, though he threw his slider and changeup less than a third of the time combined in 2023. The slider is a low 80s pitch with high spin rates in the 2600 RPM range and generated a 30% miss rate, while his changeup is a firm upper 80s offering that missed bats at a 48% rate. Opposing batters manage a 764 OPS against his secondaries compared to an 881 OPS against his fastball in 2023. So that specifically is touching on just like pitch quality, pitch usage. Looking at his overall career for Miami, some of those numbers were just citing the 2023 season. He used the fastball 62% of the time. He used the changeup 17% of the time. And he used the slider just 16% of the time. This is per synergy. And I think there were other pitches, either cutter, curveball, unknown, were all classified at 5% or less. So that's the bulk of his pitch usage throughout college. If you just look at his 2024 pro data, there's a significant change here. And I think you basically just mentioned it a second ago when you're talking about the slider, the usage being up. His fastball usage, and again, this is from Synergy with his pro data, this year is 53% fastball usage, 25% slider usage, and then 17 percent changeup usage. The splitter and changeup get broken up into two different pitch types at times. My understanding is that he's throwing a changeup and it's kind of the same pitch. But just to kind of really be specific about the numbers I'm looking at here, he basically dropped the fastball usage rate by 10%, with most of that increased usage going towards the slider. And I think that probably explains a lot of his success. He is throwing the fastball a little bit harder. The pitch shape has changed a bit in pro ball, but I don't think it's anything super dramatic. We do have movement and TrackMan data for his pitches in college. There is some question about like how those numbers just change when you go from college to pro ball, just based on how the pitches are tracked and the quality of the data you're getting. It is a little bit more ride on the fastball now, a little bit less horizontal break, but it essentially is the same sort of dead zone profile of a fastball in terms of movement. We have it at sitting 96, 97, 15.8 inches of induced vertical break, 15.2 inches of horizontal break. And really what stands out to me still with Rosario is he seems to get a lot of run on the pitch. He throws it from a really low release height. It's a high spin fastball. And he also just gets very mediocre ride. There's also one other mediocre element he gets from it. Sorry, I'm just kind of scrolling through his pro data right now to try and find this. But yeah, that's kind of how it's changed so far. The other extension, that's the other big piece. He's a really small guy, so the extension was always kind of a question I had with him, and he does seem fairly middle of the road for extension. Maybe that's better than expected given his below average height, but I've thrown a lot out there. You can kind of pick up the reins.
No, I think those are all great points. Another thing that has improved is, you know, the strike throwing ability. It was average at best at Miami, and mm-hmm. you know, now he's comfortably an above average, if not a plus strike thrower. And looking at his delivery, not a whole lot has changed, but I think one key thing with him is it's a lot more synced up, and directionally he's so improved. At Miami, he was falling all over the place, especially towards the first base dugout, and you know, flying open sometimes, and the delivery would get a little disconnected. Everything now with the Rangers is more consolidated. He's straight to the plate, and it's all just, again, it's a lot more smooth than it was at Miami. And it's clear that they've put an emphasis on attacking the strike zone with your best stuff, and he's throwing all of his pitches for strikes. He's getting a lot of whiffs in the top half of the zone with his fastball, which, again, given the low launch and the life through the zone he has, combining that with the velocity, that's where he's going to get most of his whiffs and where he's going to work with it to have it be most effective. And the secondaries have long been his calling card, so it's nice to see that with the improved strike throwing that comes from the improved direction and, you know, delivery tweaks, you know, when you combine that with the stuff and his ability to locate it, I think, you know, this is kind of the guy that you get. And he hasn't missed a beat since his promotion to high A either. Like, it's been just as dominant, almost like exactly the same numbers that he posted with single A down east.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the command control piece, because I do think that is pretty significant. There were three basic differences that I saw that stood out to me. The first was the pitch usage, which was, I think, always going to be the first place I went when looking at whether or not Rosario was pitching well or poorly in pro ball, because that seemed like the lowest hanging fruit in his profile pre-draft. The strikes, like you mentioned, he walked basically a little over 4.2 per nine in his 3 years at college. So far this year, it's all the way down to 1.3 per nine. That's a significant step forward in strikes. He's throwing strikes more with all three of his pitches. I tried to find some sort of mechanical adjustment. I didn't notice a huge change in like how the delivery looked. You mentioned some of like just the balance and better direction, more consistent direction. That's a good call. I did notice, and I'm not sure how often he did this in college versus pro, but at least late in 2023, he seemed to be pitching from the first base side of the rubber, or maybe slightly towards the middle of the rubber. In some of the video I looked at for 2024 in Pro Ball, it looked like he was pitching towards the extreme third base side of the rubber, so towards his arm side is where he's setting up on the rubber. I'm not sure if that's helped with his direction or helped him get the ball over the plate more consistently. Typically, I feel like the opposite is true. If you don't throw strikes a lot, you slide towards your glove side. The arm side seems to be to create tougher angles for hitters, and generally I've heard that it's trickier for pitchers because you're taking a more extreme angle. But regardless, that change maybe is has something to do with the increased strikes. But yeah, if you just look at like how he's attacking hitters by handedness, in college he was throwing 60% fastballs to right-handed hitters compared to just 25% sliders. Basically a two-pitch pitcher for the most part against righties. Now the fastball rate against right-handed hitters is 51%. Slider has gone all the way up to 34%. So I thought that was pretty significant, just in kind of showing how he's using the slider more to lefties. And I believe he's also using the slider more, righties. I believe he's also using the slider more against lefties now. If you look at it in college, just versus lefties, it's 63% fastball usage, 28% changeup usage. He used the slider just 4% of the time to left-handed hitters. Now, if you're just looking at this season, 56% fastball, 19% change. And again, you had to add 19% splitter to 6% change. So basically 25% changeup and then a 15% slider usage. So he really increased the slider usage across the board. And that makes sense if we believe that's his like most consistent pitch moving forward. Just throw it more often against all hitters and see if you have success with it. And so far, it seems like they've been effective. I mean, just looking at swinging strike rate, he's getting a 22% rate on the slider. He's getting a 26% rate on the changeup. Those are both really impressive numbers, even if we're just talking about A ball, and he's throwing everything for strikes more often. So there might still be some issues with the shape of the fastball, but he's throwing it hard. He's putting it over the plate, and he's more effectively setting up and just using his really quality secondary. So I think it's been a really cool profile to watch moving forward. I'll be curious to see how the control is maybe established. Is this the new baseline? Is he going to be this elite strike thrower? I maybe would be a little bit surprised about that. I imagine just attacking lower level hitters in the minors has helped that walk rate stay pretty low, but it is encouraging just to see how often he's filling up the zone with all these pitches. So kudos to Rosario, and I guess kudos to the Rangers for taking a shot on some arm talent that really needed help being unlocked.
Yeah, I mean, so far this is a massive win for the draft room for the Rangers, and obviously the player development group as well. And I think with Rosario, not to overly simplify all of this stuff, but you know, attack the zone with your best pitch and throw your best pitch more. I mean, I think you know that leads to a lot of success, and there's a pretty lengthy track record of guys doing so. That you know, you see cases like this, but he's going to be a really fun one to follow for the last couple of weeks of the minor league season. And then obviously as we head into 2025, seeing how rapid this ascent could be.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how like common it'll be to find a player like this in college where you can have this sort of pitch usage adjustment be such an, I don't know if it's obvious. It feels like it was like the first point a lot of people were looking at, but it does feel like in general, colleges tend to be more towards the opposite direction where they really hammer the secondary usage at a really high clip, and you worry about arm health with that. I know there have been some changes over at Miami's coaching staff, but I am curious if there are going to be like a number of other players that have this sort of pitch usage tweak that maybe that will help you get a little bit more out of these players in pro ball. Because all these college coaches and college pitching coaches are pretty smart with what they're doing. It's not like they don't know the pitch usage of these players. It's not like they don't know the pitch usage of or the pitch strengths of their pitchers. I'm curious as to why I guess it wasn't tried more often with Rosario specifically at some point in one of his years in college. Maybe it's just his comfort level personally was more of the fastball. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's also a key point. And I think for, you know, the Rangers player development department to kind of pick out these issues and cherry pick them probably even as, you know, as soon as they drafted him was key, because I mean, he hit the ground running and has not looked back. So And I think you hit on a good point as well. It's not like Miami and the coaching staff over there is like befuddled by pitch usage stuff and not looking at pitch usage stuff. I just think it's, you know, I think trying to figure out how best to use your arm, and every pitching coach has their own philosophy that they're pretty married to. So, I don't know, but like you said, it's not like they weren't looking at this stuff.
I mean, how confident are you that his success is driven mostly by the pitch usage versus more just throwing more strikes more often?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, just if you had to place like a percentage of like his results are because of pitch usage versus increased command, what would you say is the split there for you?
Oh,
so I'm fairly torn. I don't know.
That's a really good question.
Everything's going to play up more if your command is better and you're throwing better strikes. And he did always have quality stuff like across the board. I like all three of it. Like the fastball in terms of just pure velocity, the slider has good bite, the changeup always seemed like it was a solid pitch as well. So yeah, it is interesting to think through. I think there are a lot of factors here that are kind of working in concert with each other. I don't think the lesson learned is, okay, just throw your secondaries more often. The control and command piece, I think, is really key. If he was still walking 4.5 batters per nine, but his pitch usage was greater, he obviously wouldn't be having the same sort of success. So they're definitely linked. I would say maybe it's kind of like 50-50. I'd say I entered this conversation leaning more towards the pitch usage being more important, but I'm not sure how strongly I think of it one way or another.
Yeah, it's one, that's a great question. And two, I think it's a perfect blend and perfect storm of both. Like, it can't not be. Like you said, if he was still walking 4.5 to 5 hitters per nine innings, his stats wouldn't look the way that they do right now. But I lean a little bit towards the improved command and control, because with Rosario, stuff has always been there. And if you improve the strike throwing and feel for your arsenal, it's going to allow all of those pitches to naturally play up. So I'd lean like ever so slightly towards the command and control aspect of it.
Gotcha. Okay. Love it. Yeah. If you guys have any thoughts on Rosario and what you guys have seen from him, or thoughts in this conversation in general, definitely hit us up and let us know. Cause I think it's just an interesting, he was always going to be an interesting player to follow. And the fact that he's had pretty immediate success, I feel like there are some lessons to be learned there. So it's cool. Yeah, 13.1 strikeouts per nine, 1.3 walk per nine. Pretty loud rates for him.
Yeah, not bad, that plays.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed, because Indeed makes hiring easy and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true for even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's BADLANDSFOOD.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. 1 stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
Definitely does. All right, let's move into some 2025 draft talk. Last week, Peter, we talked some high school players. We talked some pitchers. I don't think we have yet addressed some of the very top college hitters in the class, at least on the podcast. So I wanted to talk through a few of those. We've got a trio of outfielders who are kind of leading the college crop at this point in time. I am in the midst of like reporting more on the class and getting some updated information and feedback from scouts just to see how these players will line up on our next update for the draft. But it seems pretty safe to say that the combination of Jace Laviolette from Texas A&M, Cam Cannarella at Clemson, and then Devin Taylor at Indiana, who we both saw in the Cape and at Team USA, are some of the top college hitters in the class. So I kind of wanted to just open up a conversation on these guys, see what you think about them, pros and cons, how far apart they are in your mind in terms of talent on the board, and just get a sense of what we should expect from the most glamorous demographic for draft fans. Everyone wants a college hitter. So what are your thoughts on these guys in general? I'll let you take it basically in whatever direction you want to go.
Yeah, so I think to separate, like at least for me, Laviolette and Cannarella are in this tier of their own for college position guys and just college guys in general. I wrestle with who I would take 1-1 quite often, honestly. And I was doing the same this year in 2024, and I probably will again in 25. But coming into this year, Cannarella was my way too early, if you can even call it way too early, 1-1 guy for the 2025 class.
Yeah.
And he had another really solid year at Clemson. I think the name of the game with him is, you know, he's the toolsier guy of the bunch. The hit tool is above average, if not plus. He's tapped into a little bit more raw power. It's always going to be hit over power, but I'm a real believer in his ability to hit and the feel for the barrel and all that. And he's a plus runner. And I know if you look at the stats, you see 0 stolen bases. He got thrown out twice. Like he's going to run a lot more in 25. I don't know like how healthy the shoulder was this year. I know that was an issue for him. at least towards the end of 2023. And I think that they wanted to avoid any sort of like head first slide kind of deal.
Dealing with an injury the entire year and just simply avoiding being aggressive on the basis to not further hurt one of your key players seems like it makes sense to me to do that. And yeah, going from 24 steals to nothing definitely seems more like a sort of a usage on the bases rather than any lack of speed.
Exactly. And like, if he's back to 100% healthy, he'll steal 20 bags again if he wants to. But I was encouraged with the average, with the improved impact, the improvement in the game power department. And when you combine that with the feel for the barrel and all of that stuff and the hitterish look he has, you know, it's a recipe for success. And I am very confident in his ability to stick in center field. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent athlete. It's a really quick first step with advanced baseball sense, and that catch that he made in the super regional against Florida will forever be ingrained in my mind. The one where he actually took kind of a bad route to it, like, not like the catch was insane, but he didn't take a great route to it, but nonetheless broke in at first and then made up a ton of ground going straight back, actually curled a little bit to his arm side to the right, and then jumped Willie Mays style, crashed into the wall, and like made a as basket a catch as you can be. Like, he didn't even, like, it's almost like he just trapped it, you know, in his glove. He didn't even really, I'm not going to say he didn't really catch it, but like, you know what I'm saying? Anyone who saw the catch knows what I'm saying, but yeah, it'll stick at a premium position. There are tools on tools on tools. There's performance there. There's wood bat performance with USA. You know, Lavalette was 1-1 in the 2025 ranking, the most recent one, and that's not going to change over the course of the summer to the fall when we update it, but it is really, really close between the two. I'm curious if you lean one way or another.
Yeah, I don't know that I would fold in Devin Taylor here just because he's the guy that I put looks on, or I was more focused on, I should say, with just covering the Team USA top 10. They feel like they're kind of this, like, you could plot a spectrum with all these guys, and like Laviolette, I have the most concerns about his pure bat to ball skills, but I also was most excited about his pitch recognition, just swing decisions. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have Cannarella, who seems like the best pure bat to ball hitter of the trio, but was also most aggressive in his swing decisions out of the zone, just chasing overall. And then you have, and again, the same way, Laviolette has a ton of power. Cam Cannarella, I would say, has the least amount of power. And then you have a guy like Devin Taylor, who seems to split the two pretty, I'd say, across the board in all these pitch types. Like, he doesn't have quite as much contact as Cannarella, but it's less concerning to me than what Jace Laviolette has shown. He doesn't chase quite as much as Cannarella, but it's not quite the eye that Laviolette has shown, just in terms of which pitches he's swinging at. His exit velocity data isn't quite as impressive as Laviolette, but it's better than Cannarella. So really, there are like three flavors of hitter here I feel like you could line up. I'll need to watch them a little bit more and just get a little bit more feedback before I strongly have a preference for one. I will say, like, with Cannarella, he is very small for a player at this sort of tier of prospect. I mean, Charlie Condon was thin, but he was also 6'6". Do you have any concerns about just the size with Cannarella? I mean, we're dealing with injury questions with him now. I imagine those are going to be a question in the same way that Nick Kurtz and J.J. Weatherholt had injury questions. But what are your thoughts on just the frame, physique, durability, and power upside of Cannarella? Because I would say right now I probably lean more towards a Laviolette or a Taylor simply because I have more confidence in them producing for power with a wood bat at the next level. Like, both Taylor and Laviolette have had seasons with 20 or more homers. Laviolette's done it back-to-back years. Taylor just hit 20 after hitting 16 and 23. Cannarella has hit 7 and then 11. It's just looking at like home run totals, so it's not the end-all be-all, but I will say that like power piece of Cannarella is a bit concerning to me, unless I'm convinced that he's like a 70 grade hitter who's definitely sticking in center field. And I'm not convinced any of these guys are 70 hitters quite yet.
Yeah, again, Cannarella, you can make the argument that it's a 6, and I think it's a pretty reasonable argument to make, but it's not a 70 grade hit tool by any means. And I think you're completely valid in the concerns with Cannarella's power upside. and you look at his frame too. It's this really wiry, I don't want to say mangy, but like really wiry athlete in a body where you kind of look at it and you want, like, people sometimes are just naturally built like that, where it's tough to put, like, I don't know how much weight you can put on it. And I think if you do put on some weight, like, it's going to take away from some of the other tools that he's got. Like, again, his instincts and not the instincts, because that'll, you know, that'll stick, but like the quickness in his first step, the ability to be a difference maker on the base pass, it'll take away from that. And it's not going to be much of a trade-off for a lot of power added. Like, you're talking about maybe getting him to average, I'd say, with Wood. So like, I'm with you on that. For like a body comp wise, this is a really obscure one, but it's like, I'd say Brooks Baldwin, like, it's again, just that wiry athlete. Like, you don't want to touch that frame and add 10, 15 pounds to it. And it's honestly a body type that probably can't put on that type of weight. At least just from seeing Brooks up close for a while and all that. But I kind of lean Lavalette. Like, I mean, he's this hulking 6'6", 230-pound guy. The raw power is double plus, comfortably with metal, comfortably plus with Wood. You know me, I'm a sucker for a hit tool and really need a hit tool. And while there's a little bit more miss and end zone miss than I would like, I think the advanced approach and swing decisions help compensate for some of it. Like, he chased it, I think, just either a hair above or a hair below 20% this year. I think it was actually 18%, which was really, really impressive for anyone, but especially for someone of his stature and playing in the SEC and for the pitching that you're going to see. I thought that I was arguably most blown away by that. And he's actually done a decent job holding down center field. I think a move to a corner outfield is almost certain, but like, you know, it works in center field. You know, he covers a lot of ground and, you know, he's actually a really good athlete for his size and moves really well. So again, I probably lean Lavalette, and a guy that I think, and I know I've been beating the drum a little bit on him since, you know, throughout the summer cycle and the last couple of podcasts we've done, but I think as the cycle unfolds here, people are going to realize that Brandon Compton from Arizona State, I don't think is at all far off from someone like a Devin Taylor. And that's not a knock on Devin Taylor at all. He still belongs in this conversation, but I think it's more of a endorsement of Brandon Compton. Like, I saw him numerous times this summer and the pitch recognition skills were fantastic. He was in complete control of the strike zone. He shortened up with two strikes. There was an advanced feel for the barrel. The raw power with Wood is without a doubt plus. It's kind of this, and it's a little bit of a similar defensive profile to Devin Taylor, where it's like left field DH type. But Compton, and I know it's weird to talk this way about a left fielder, but he moves kind of well out there and left, and there's a little bit of range into the left center gap. The arm is tinkering with above average. He kind of throws sinkers out there, but no, he's you're buying the offensive profile with him, and the offensive profile is extremely real. And I think that he's going to go back to Arizona State and have a equally productive, if not even more productive, season than he did last year. Like, there's 20 to 25 plus home run upside, especially with metal in the tank form this spring. And, you know, he'll be a first round guy if he just goes out and performs.
Yeah, Compton is an interesting one. I'm curious if you thought there was a change in maybe his approach at the plate, because I would say, like, when you were talking about how excited you were with his swing decisions, he does stand out. And if you're looking at just the 2024 spring data that we have with Arizona State, like, he would have been the most aggressive hitter of all these four that we're talking about. He chased over 30% rate. And then if you just look at his CAPE numbers, that was all the way down to 24%. I didn't look quite specifically at the contact numbers, but I am curious if this is maybe like a Cam Smith situation where there's been some notable adjustment in his game that moving forward, maybe we can bank on some improvement carrying over from the summer. He did hit well, just superficially, 354, 427, 661, north of 1,000 OPS, 14 homers, 16 doubles. But prior to your comments just now on Compton, I would have probably thought of him as a guy that I did wonder about the swing decisions and about the contact skills. it was a 25% strikeout rate in the spring, which I think would have been higher than everyone outside of Jace LaViolette in his freshman season at A&M when he struck out almost 27% of the time. Then he lowered that to 24 this spring. So, yeah, if you saw any change in approach, or if you think it was maybe just a question of a smaller sample or pitching quality, that is definitely the area that I'm most interested in digging into now, just based on what you said with him.
Yeah, it was clear that he had a much better sense for picking up spin out of the hand at Arizona State, and I'm sure you saw this. He had the tendency to expand the zone, and you know, his not so great swing decisions often came against spin. And on the Cape,
it was a 40% miss rate on sliders, 39% miss rate on curveballs, which are both really high, even for those pitch types in college, particularly for players we're talking about at the very top of the class. Like, I think the miss versus spin is also a question for LaViolette. He had a 35% miss rate on sliders. This is his first two seasons at Texas A&M, so not just one. And a 25% miss on curveballs, really against changeups as well, 34%. And since Charlie Condon has struggled so much with just not chasing changeups and missing against breaking balls and pro ball, that's certainly on my mind as I think through like who could potentially be one of the top college hitters in the class, like a weakness against breaking balls. Just if that is already a problem for you in college, it's going to get exposed really quickly in pro ball, we're seeing with Charlie Condon. So that's definitely an area I'm going to be keying in on for all these hitters.
Yeah, 100%. I think with Compton, what he was doing was he sat really still in the box, and it was a small adjustment and one that you might not even pick up, you know, just watching one game. But he sat really, really still, and like the head movement was super minimal. He was really level, and he let his immense natural strength just do all the work. And he's got electric bat and hand speed. And he kind of just let his God-given talent show. And I think I'll be most curious to follow, as I'm sure you will as well, just how the contact ability is against spin this year at Arizona State. Like, is there some improvement in that aspect? Like, are the swing decisions going to continue to stay on this upward trajectory? I think those are two fun storylines to follow. And I think that, again, he's got the upside of a potential top 20, 25-ish type pick.
Yeah, it does feel like the college outfielder depth at the top of this class is quite strong. We've got other guys like Brandon Summerhill at Arizona, Nick Dumasnell at Cal Baptist, Gavin Turley at Oregon State, Nolan Schubart, Oklahoma State. Ton of outfielders. It definitely is the demographic that stands out most on the college hitting side at this point.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, again, Compton falls in that cheese ball territory, and Dumanil was a guy that I became infatuated with towards the tail end of last season. And, you know, with Cannarella, where you don't have this big time impact, like Dumanil was not only impacting the ball on a regular basis at Cal Baptist, but he was doing it all summer on the Cape too with Wood. Like, he was, I think I dropped this exact line on the podcast last week, but he top spun a homer at 107 in the All-Star game that, you know, hit off the scoreboard, and he is this chiseled 6'2", 200 pound elite athlete. It's tools on tools on tools, but with him, my biggest worry is the hit tool. Kind of a little bit similar to Vance Honeycutt last cycle. I know. Just I'd love to see some improvement in the contact ability and the pitch recognition skills, but those did improve as the summer went on. So I want to see him continue to do it at Cal Baptist, especially where, again, the WAC is solid, but you're not talking about the SEC. So there's no reason why that shouldn't continue to take a step forward. But that's another one where I wouldn't be shocked to see a team bet on just the pure tools and upside of Dumanil and eventually pop him in the top 15 to 20-ish at least type of picks.
Okay, which four outfielders would you rather have? Charlie Condon, Braden Montgomery, Vance Honeycutt, and James Tibbs? Or Jace LaViolette, Cam Cannarella, Devin Taylor, and Brandon Compton?
Oh, see, that's a great hypothetical, because with Tibbs and Honeycutt, if you had thrown in Dumanil into the hypothetical, like Compton and Tibbs are really similar a little bit.
Can,
like Tibbs,
you can choose your best four too, if that makes it easier. I assumed Compton would be that guy since you seem to like him so much. Basically, I pulled the top four college outfielders from last year's class and this year's class for you. So if you want to sub in Dumanil, please feel free.
Oh man, see, with Compton and Tibbs, it's going to be a popular comp just because of the offensive profile. Tibbs is hit tool. I think he'll always have a leg up on Compton, but power wise, it'll be there. And I can't be. I know Connens had a really rough go of it, but I can't completely write him off after however many at-bats it's been.
Like, I would say my perception of Condon, where he finished the year, is in a tier that none of these college outfielders are in quite yet. Not to say they won't get there, but just for me, they're not in that tier of prospect yet. I mean, Condon made a significant step forward during the spring that helped push him into that tier, and presumably a lot of these guys are going to address some of their weaknesses or just take natural steps for as players in their draft spring. So there's plenty of time to get there. I think I would take last year's group, but that also is just an asymmetry of the information I have on those players. I just feel more comfortable with what I know and don't know about those players versus the 25 still at this point. Like, so many of these guys I just haven't seen nearly as often. And I would say some of their flaws seem more, although I don't even know if I'd necessarily say that. Like Tibbs and Honeycutt have very clear and obvious flaws. I guess I should say, like, I have a more complete picture of them as prospects now, so that's probably why I lean towards them. But I'm very much open to having that opinion change as we progress over this with this draft class.
Yeah, not to be boring, as excited as I am about guys like Jace LaValette, I'm a huge fan, as everyone knows now, of Cam Canarella, Brandon Compton in a similar breath. Devin Taylor has long been a guy in the class. I think I still have to go with last year's group of four. It's tough not to.
Yeah, that was a solid group. Okay, cool. Any other players you want to mention, Peter, before we get out of here?
No, I think that was it. I think that another conversation we'll have on a later episode is it was really interesting how this year's draft unfolded, where we've got guys like Jalen Flores, Harrison Didowick, Ryan Prager, Colby Shelton, among others, going back to school. I think it'll be fun to talk through how they factor into this class, where they slot in, where you can expect them to, you know, potentially hear their name called. That's, I think, a really fun wrinkle to the class.
Yeah, those guys we got to rewrite all over again next year. Make us work for it. So no, that'll be an interesting wrinkle. Okay, Peter, what are you working on? What do you want to tease? What do you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, so it's been transfer portal heavy the last couple of weeks. This past Wednesday, I released the top 10 transfer classes. Spoiler alert, the SEC did really well, but the ACC, Big 12, and Big 10 all were represented in there. There's some really intriguing classes on top of some excellent players. It's a near 3,000-word piece, so there's a lot of info, I think, in there that's pretty useful. Next week, I know we've got a combined 2026 update. 2025 update will come soon thereafter. We've got the weekly draft podcast. There will be a lot of coverage this fall about potential freshmen making an impact in their first year on campus. And on the baseballamerica.com side is starting to get into handbook season. So there will be no shortage of prospect content both this month, the following month, and beyond. And then before you know it, we're at the new year and we're ramping right back up again.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I don't really need to add too much to that. You kind of broke it down really well. I'll just say thank you guys for listening. If you want to leave a rating or review of the show where you listen to your podcast, that would be very helpful. If you have any feedback to make the show better, or just thoughts or questions you want to send to us, you can do that as well. You can find me and Peter on Twitter pretty easily. You can also email me at carlos.galazzo@baseballamerica.com, and I can get your questions in there as well. So if you just have any draft related questions, feel free to send them to us wherever it's easiest for you. We'll be happy to take them. But for Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody. We'll see you next time.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.